Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport. Thank you for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I am Terry Foy, joined once again by a Division I head coach as we are now on the backside of September 1st. But we are recording this days before, in the days leading up to it, and I am so glad to be joined by Vermont head coach Chris Fifes as we talk about recruiting. Coach Fifes, thank you so much for joining us.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, Terry. It's great to be here.
Yeah, no doubt. You laid down a very hearty gauntlet when I asked you to do this because you said Vermont recruiting is pretty vanilla, which, you know, if you're an interviewer, is not the thing that you want to hear your subjects say. Fortunately for me, probably not that unfortunately for you, I disagree. And we're going to talk about all the ways in which I think recruiting to Vermont is unique and interesting. But even before we get there, I think it's valuable to just kind of lay a little bit of a foundation. So do you mind telling the audience a little bit about your background, how you kind of formed a lacrosse identity, your career path leading you to Burlington, and how you have kind of established this Catamount program since you arrived?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, I've been at Vermont going in my eighth year now, so it's been an amazing journey up here in Burlington, and I've definitely learned the most about myself as a coach and how to coach, you know, up here in Burlington with, you know, how special this place is and the challenges that come along with it. So it's been an amazing, you know, going into my eighth season here. Prior to Vermont, I was fortunate to work at UNC for Coach Bresci for 6 years and had an amazing experience there. It was an opportunity of a lifetime, and I learned a tremendous amount about defense and coaching and how to manage an elite program from Coach Bresci. He's such an amazing mentor. And prior to UNC, I was at the Virginia Military Institute for 2 years right out of college, coaching with for one of my former mentors, Jeff Shirk, from the University of Maryland. And, you know, he taught me a lot about, you know, how this business works and how Division I coaching, you know, goes. And that was an amazing experience as well. So, you know, just these three stops that I've been at have all been, you know, very different, but also similar. And I've able to kind of carry some of those lessons from each school to the next one, which has really set me up for a lot of success here at Vermont.
How do you describe the state of the program when you arrived and took over?
You know, when I got here, I think it was one that was a little bit in turmoil. You know, they had just their first conference finals appearance in program history in 2016. And ironically, I remember watching their championship game after we played our first round game at UNC. The morning I woke up, you know, I went and turned the TV on and Vermont was playing Hartford at the time. And I thought, wow, what a cool story. You know, Vermont is here playing in their championship as well, and didn't think anything about, you know, there may be an opening in a couple months. But, you know, I was very impressed with them. And I just knew that it was such a great opportunity with their Canadian influence, which I really identify with, you know, my time at UNC and, you know, being up in this part of the country where I've spent a lot of time as a kid. So, you know, when I got here, I think there was a lot of really hungry guys that were, you know, looking to take this program to the next step. And, you know, Ryan Curtis left it in a great place to do that. And so I was fortunate to build my own staff and, you know, get this thing going in 2017 and, you know, get it pointed in the direction it is currently.
You mentioned one element there, which is where I would like to begin when we talk about the actual, you know, kind of unique nature of the way in which you have recruited at Vermont, the Canadian influence. And one of the elements of how that has changed over the course of your tenure is basically a continued opening up of Canadian recruiting. And I think that, you know, I find a line of demarcation with Zach Greer's arrival at Duke. I think that was a binary change. And it's certainly a function of my age. And when I started following the game more closely, I'm sure that if I were 5 years older, you know, I would look at John Grant Jr.'s path or Brody Merrill's path and say, you know, those were the things that changed. But, you know, when you look at how recruiting Canadians evolved dating back to 2005 and the distinction between that 2005 Duke team versus 2004, the idea of going to Canada in order to get a finisher, which, you know, scoring goals is the nature of the game, and sometimes it can be the hardest thing to find. It created a little bit more democracy or a little bit more equity in terms of that very scarce resource. But what's interesting is it almost feels like there's, I don't want to say no end, but, you know, basically it has been a pretty linear curve or a linear increase of knowledge and awareness, and college coaches at all levels, you know, trying to find Canadian prospects with box backgrounds who can come and help their program. So that's one element of it. But the other element of it is that you haven't limited your contributors to essentially the Chris Cloutiers of the world. You've found guys from up north that have been able to contribute all over the field. How do you describe your staff's approach to recruiting Canada, and how do you think your location and the culture of Burlington both helps and maybe even hurts a little bit relative to your ability to attract them to become Catamounts?
Well, first of all, I think all the credit belongs to the Canadians. I mean, what those guys bring to the game is a much more blue-collar approach than, you know, the version of field lacrosse that we have in the States, of just a much more white-collar version. You know, those guys, they love the game. They thrive when the lights come on, and they're not scared of the big moments, and they're not scared to play, you know, a tough brand of the game. So there's an immediate attraction for their intangibles and what they do to not only your X's and O's side of things, but also what they do to your locker room and what they do to your team culture. So I've always said that here at Vermont, the Canadians are the backbone of our program, and they're a huge piece to kind of our grittiness and our toughness and who we want to be. We don't have any unique approach to what we look for in terms of Canadians. I think we all, you know, want to go to a high-end junior A game and find their best, you know, attackman or their best transition guy or their grittiest defenseman and pick those guys up and add them to your roster. For us, fortunately, we're the closest Division I team to Canada, to the Canadian border. So we really try to play on that with how easy it is for families to come and see their sons play, to drive and fly. You know, we have an airport 5 minutes from campus here in Burlington. So it allows for all of those families who are very, very family oriented to come and support their sons on a weekly basis. The weather pattern is very similar to Ontario, obviously, being on a giant lake. This is cottage country, you know, in some ways, and we're surrounded by beautiful mountains and a lot of outdoor activities that a lot of Canadians are used to growing up around. So I think just the cultural fit is just hand in hand. I mean, it feels like home, and every single one that comes to visit Burlington, you know, echoes those sentiments. There really are certain Canadians, I think, that, you know, look for more of those, you know, ACCs or maybe some Big Ten, kind of bigger schools with football programs and, you know, massive facilities and massive campuses. You know, that's not who we are at Vermont. We're much more of a, mid-sized school with, you know, lacrosse being a major priority here. And we really want to highlight that as the biggest sports team on campus and one that, you know, we think draws a lot of community support. And, we've really seemed to have a great pipeline with the Canadians, and we want to keep that going.
How much time do you and your staff spend in Ontario over the course of the summer?
You know, since COVID, we haven't spent as much time up there as we used to. I used to go up there, you know, at least twice a year, maybe once in the fall and once in the summertime, and try to hit a couple box games, try to hit the All Canada games and, you know, cover as much ground in a couple of days as I could. Luckily, as you said, there's so many Canadians that are now traveling down to the States with their club teams to play, you know, in the fall and the summer, but also schools like the Hill Academy and, other schools. I'm trying to think of Everest Academy was the one I was thinking of, you know, that they bring their teams down to play really strong high school teams. And so you're getting a lot more visibility than they ever have. And I think that helps, you know, identify who those players are. This year, we actually went up to Canada for some new events, which we hadn't been to, that Matt Brown, you know, spearheaded the Canadian development event. And it was really, really awesome to see a new kind of format than we were used to, get to see how these kids respond to coaching, and also get to see them play some games as well. So we were able to really get a good feel for the Canadian kind of market, if you will, post-COVID, where they really didn't have much visibility and much of a chance to play field lacrosse. So I think we're just starting to see, you know, those guys get back into their groove again, and it's been great to see.
Is there anything unique about evaluating a player playing a box game relative to a field game that you have come to realize is more valuable than something else?
That's a great question. It's just such a different sport. You know, it's just such a violent and physical and just mentally draining sport that I'm just always impressed, no matter when I watch a box game, what level, you know, the abuse that these guys dole out and the abuse that they take and the precision and the skill that they're still able to maintain. I mean, it's just, I'm always in awe of it. And even though I'm a coach, I like to think of myself as a huge lacrosse fan. So I just love to watch the game and just love to look for those incredibly tough guys who, you know, respond to adversity in a major way. And I'm always looking for those guys to step up and rise to the challenge. And I think Canadians really embody that.
Last question before we move on to the next topic. I think I know the answer to this question, and I hope I'm right. Who is the most successful or decorated player to come through the program that you recruited and committed?
Wow. I mean, I didn't recruit this guy. You know, I think the first guy would be Ian McKay. I think he's been the most visible guy and the ultimate team player. And I'm just so proud that he's a Catamount because he embodies who we want to be. The next guy I would have to say, would be Thomas McConvey. You know, yeah. Thomas, when the coaching change happened, you know, he was committed as a different year. And there was a lot of schools that were poking around trying to get him to go to other schools. And, you know, my staff and I were able to convince him to stay committed to Vermont and come a year early because we knew he could be an immediate impact player. And he started all 4 years and was that impact player that we wanted him, needed him to be. So at this point in time, I would say Thomas.
Well, no, that was what I wanted you to say. And the reason is, okay, and what I was wondering as to the level of accuracy was the role that you played in recruiting him. And, you know, regardless of whether or not you took his commitment, I think the point that yields the next question that I want to ask still stands, which is that, you know, this is the 10th in a series of conversations that I've had with your peers. And one of the emerging themes is that we do the best we can. You know, and not every shot we take pans out the way we expect it to. And on a broad basis, like from the standpoint of an entire class or whatever the case may be, you know, we're wrong a lot. And what's interesting to me is that there's one guy whose quality you've advocated to me more than anybody else over the course of your tenure at Vermont, and it was Thomas McConvey. And the thing that was most interesting about that, and we all draw on our own personal experience when it comes to these types of things, and I used to use this anecdote all the time when early recruiting was a topic of conversation. There was one player in my high school class that made it to the NFL, and he was a first-round NFL draft pick at receiver. And all of us knew when we were in eighth grade that he was the best athlete. So there are times at which it's just, it is that plain, right? And you know, it also has happened in lacrosse from the standpoint of Brennan O'Neill, right? He was, at the time that he committed, the, you know, the youngest player in the history of the sport to make a college commitment. And he has now, you know, gone on to have, he's the Torton winner, and he was the reason that the USA team won the gold medal. So, like, my point is that there are players who just transcend the uncertainty. You know, the term can't miss has been applied to players who have missed. But when you call a player a can't miss and then he doesn't miss, there's something about that that just strikes me as remarkable. And so I wanted to just, you know, kind of unpack that a little bit relative to what it was that you saw out of Thomas that you feel like was so differentiated.
I mean, the thing I love about lacrosse is that it doesn't cater to one type of body type or one type of skill set. It's a very, ironically, a very inclusive sport from an athletic standpoint, and that it can cater to so many different types of athletes, which is why I think the game is still growing and has so much room to grow. But then there's other guys that, you know, are so physically dominant and they're so capable of just imposing their will on other people. You know, and a lot of times you think of that as a defensive player, but Thomas, since the first time I saw him play, has just been imposing his will on defenses as just a grown man. I mean, he was always bigger than people. He had silky smooth hands, incredible motor, just a high IQ player that knew how to play his role. And it was just undeniable. And I think, you know, early on, there was obviously other headaches with, you know, putting your own spin on a program, but what probably caused me to lose the most sleep was that Thomas would get poached from us, because I knew that Thomas was going to be such a valuable guy for this program. And, you know, he has not wavered. He never wavered, but you know how convincing some of these coaches are and some of these schools that things that they have to offer. And Thomas never wavered on his commitment to the Cats. And he's a true Cat. So I'm just, you know, really proud that, you know, he stuck with us.
Let's move on to a couple other topics that I was thinking about prior to this conversation. And the next is your identity of being in New England. And obviously, you mentioned that you're the closest to the Canadian border, which comes with like a little bit of an offsetting factor of you're kind of far from like the epicenter of New England in Boston and Connecticut. But at the same time, you're not as far as if you head really far south. And so there's an opportunity to find a foothold within that community that might not exist elsewhere. How do you regard recruiting New England, and especially when, you know, you can offer such a unique and compelling experience, but oftentimes you're recruiting against opportunities, be it in the NESCACs or ever, you know, whoever else, that offer a similar kind of unique and enriching experience?
Yeah, I mean, I think I feel very lucky. You know, like you said, Vermont is not as close to, you know, some of those New England hotbeds as people think. I mean, it's a little bit of a drive. It's not super convenient from a flight standpoint to fly to those places. And I know at UNC, I felt like I was flying, you know, every recruiting weekend. That was just the nature of the beast, whereas here, you're going to be driving everywhere. But you know, the thing I love about New England is there's so much great coaching up here. And so these kids are playing at a really highly competitive level, and they're getting coaching from a youth level. And so I feel like, you know, a lot of people's tendency is to, you know, find the diamond in the rough from the non-traditional areas. Well, you know, finding kids from your backyard that may not be, you know, 1A option on their team, but they may be the second or third guy that are really high IQ glue guys who know what it takes to win. We have a lot of those guys. There's so many good lacrosse players across the country, but specifically in New England, it's such a highly dense area for lacrosse talent. We're able to not only go to a lot of events in New England, but rely on a lot of coaches in our backyard to let us know, hey, we got a guy that's interested in your school and he's able to drive up tomorrow, you know, and come see Vermont. And by the way, he's been skiing in Vermont since he was 10 years old. So he's got a good feel for what it's like up there. So we really do try to use that kind of backyard mentality. Although we do have over 20 different states represented on our roster, we still try to recruit the bulk of our players from hotbeds where we feel like they're going to have a high athletic IQ and they come from a really strong coaching pedigree.
Continuing on, one element that is different in terms of the way that you're recruiting now relative to when you arrived is handling success. And your team has made it to multiple NCAA tournaments and won multiple America East championships. How has that changed the approach?
Well, the first thing is it's just set the standard for us and set the expectation. And that's been a positive because now every kid that comes in here, you know, knows what he's got to meet and what he's got to do to get back to those moments. And it's very, very difficult. In all conferences, but especially in this conference, and especially with the weather challenges and the travel challenges that we have as it relates to getting prepared for a game on a week-to-week basis. But the positive, you know, that comes along with it as well is just the recruiting piece. Now you have some visibility where, you know, you go to a state that may be kind of an outlier state, and you're able to get one of the best kids in the entire state that has never known about Vermont simply because he saw you on ESPN. You know, or he saw you on ESPN Plus and he saw you on the selection show. And, you know, kids want to win. People want to be associated with winners and they want to go to places where they have a chance to compete in the NCAA tournament. And this is definitely a school where you can do that. And so it's definitely given us more traction in the recruiting world. And it's helped us set the expectation when freshmen arrive on campus as to, you know, what our level of discipline is going to be like, what our training is going to look like, and what our expectations are. And that just kind of speeds the process up. There's not as much, you know, gray area that we have to go through.
Along similar lines, you also recently experienced the function of a staff change. You know, Jake Bernhardt had been a longtime assistant, and he went back to his alma mater, and Danny Murphy came and joined your staff. What's it been like getting used to a new group of individuals who have maybe different priorities from the way that they schedule being on the road in the summer, have different tastes when it comes to evaluating players, have different methods of communicating with you and with the rest of the staff, and then as you lead up to September 1st, would have a different approach or style in terms of how they communicate with prospects?
Well, I've been fortunate to work under and work with some really great coaches in my time and have learned a lot from guys that have had more experience than me. So I feel like I have a pretty clear picture, even, you know, at my age, like what I need, like what what type of role we need to fill and what type of person that will take. I was fortunate, you know, to have two assistant coaches for 6 years here at Vermont as I kind of built the program to where it is now. And that continuity really helped with not only recruiting, but also just the culture. And so last year we had to replace four coaches, two full-time assistants, a volunteer, and a dolo. And that was a big turnover. You know, that was a lot to chew in 1 year, but it's really, you know, made me a better coach. And it really kind of made me look inward about, you know, what is my role? What should my role be? What do I bring to the program? And what can I bring to the program? So what type of person should I bring in to help me complement my strengths so that maybe we can get the best out of this program? And, you know, I was really lucky that, again, I have some strong relationships and someone put Danny Murphy on my radar. And, you know, the guy was eager to be a part of our program early in the process, and high IQ guy who obviously had a really good playing career, but wants to be a coach, you know, and I really value coaches that want to be a coach. Nothing wrong with playing professionally. Obviously there's a cachet that comes along with that and the recruiting piece and, you know, helps us gain credibility. But it's really, again, made me do some searching inward and try to find out how I can build a staff that can give me, you know, another 6 years or another 7 years and keep not only our team happy, but keep our assistants happy so that they want to stay for more than a year to kind of grow as a coach, grow as an assistant coach, and also help build the offense or the defense up to their liking. Cause I really do like to delegate and I want to have coaches that I feel trustworthy or that I'm trusting that I can delegate to. And, you know, Danny's really one of those guys. He's truly an all-star.
When it comes to how you gauge interest versus expressed interest in a prospect, I would imagine that you're in a position where, because Vermont is very unique, there are some guys who Vermont is their dream school. That is where they want to go. And then it becomes a question of whether or not they can meet your level. And then I'm sure that there are other guys who you reach out to and maybe they hadn't considered it. Maybe they had considered it, but it wasn't necessarily at the top of their list. And then you have to start the education process and saying, you know, if this is something that you will consider more seriously, this is what you're going to find and learn. How do you balance that level of interest?
That's a great question. The first thing I try to do, and I stole this from Coach Soule at Navy by way of Ryan Wellner, who was an assistant there, was really identifying the people that want to come to Vermont first, identifying the people that have interest in your program, kind of vetting them and figuring out, can they play at your level and are they a good fit for your program? So they deserve, just based on the buy-in and what they're going to bring, the first crack at this thing. So we start with them. And then, as you said, the next layer is finding kids that may not know about Vermont yet. They don't know anything about the program or anything about the school. We've had kids that didn't even know, you know, Vermont was a state, where it was. Is that in Canada? That type of thing, you know. So it's finding kids that don't know. And as you said, educating them and telling them why this is a special place and why it's an all-around experience. What makes this place unique other than a lot of other lacrosse schools with where they're located geographically, what they offer academically, lacrosse-wise, but also socially, to have that kind of 360-degree experience. So fleshing out the kids that want to be here, educating the kids that don't know yet about Vermont. And then at the end of the process, there will be a couple kids that maybe you have to kind of talk them into it, right? Because they don't know what they don't know. And you see the potential and you see what they can do athletically and you know what their reviews are from their coaches and what they can bring to your culture. But you have to basically convince them to take a chance on you. I'm really big on kids betting on themselves, and I really want to be around kids that are willing to bet on themselves and make a tough decision because, you know, I just feel like those are the guys I want to be in the trenches with. And Vermont brings that to the forefront for most of our recruits. You know, a lot of our guys are not the top five-star recruits. They're not getting a lot of mentions, and I'm okay with that. You know, I'm absolutely okay with that. I want diamonds in the rough. I want guys that have a chip on their shoulder with something to prove, and they want to use Vermont as that canvas to, you know, show that they can compete with anybody.
One element of that, Vermont is my number one. It's the top of my list. It's where I've wanted to go, is kids from Vermont. And it's not a hotbed. How has it changed in terms of, you know, recruitable players, college prospects since you arrived? And what role do you think that your program has played in aiding, sparking, or assisting that change?
Well, the first thing is, you know, Vermont is the second least populated state in the country. So a lot of kids that grow up in this state just by default are looking to go out and experience the bigger world around us, you know, whether that's going to Boston or New York or, you know, down to the mid-Atlantic. So there's a lot of kids that just want to get out of the state, you know, just right out of the gate. But I think that, you know, we're seeing more traction with the recruiting in state. We had a freshman come in this year, Finn O'Hara, who was, you know, the Vermont State Athlete of the Year. We have a couple other young men on our team from Essex High School that are phenomenal lacrosse players that, you know, may have fallen through the cracks in the COVID years that I think are really good lacrosse players. You know, just the sheer number, you know, the pool of numbers, there's just not a lot of kids playing lacrosse in general. So that just makes the amount of recruitable kids a lot smaller than most states. So we haven't had as many Vermont kids as I would have liked, but we have had a number, and they've been great, you know, members of our culture and members of our locker room. I'd like to think that the crowds that we've been generating and, you know, again, like just hosting the America East tournament this year and the year before, bringing all those fans into Burlington and coming to our beautiful stadium and being surrounded by the mountains, like that's, you know, seeing all of our guys signing autographs after games is like such an emotional moment, you know, to have these kids looking up to those guys. I can remember growing up in Durham, North Carolina, and going to Duke games, you know, and watching all those guys play and being like, wow, you know, I want to be just like, you know, Kevin Cassis, or just like, you know, the Hartofalis brothers, or, you know, guys that are just, you know, gods, you know. And I hope that the youth in this town are really looking up to our players, because we have some fantastic, you know, young men that are from New England or from Canada or from Vermont, and hopefully we'll have more, but it just takes time. And, you know, hopefully with these Vermont, young Vermont guys we have, these future cats will see that you can have a lot of success here and you can play at the highest level and stay close to home.
So one of the things, this is kind of a collision of two questions that someone told me 5-10 years ago that has stuck with me, is that there are challenges when it comes to building a team and a roster in Burlington. That, and this is why it's stuck out to me. It might not necessarily be what you would expect. It's like, it's a really fun town. There are a lot of off-field distractions that you have to manage. And, you know, they compared it to like Jacksonville and the beach. And I was like, I mean, I guess if you're really big into skiing or snowboarding, but they're like, no, it goes beyond that. And I was like, okay. And then I went and I was like, yeah, I can see how this would be a really appealing place to go and to live. And so I bring that up in the context of colliding it with the earlier question about success, because, you know, when we spoke to Andy Shea earlier this month about the distinction between recruiting to a Yale that had not won a national championship versus one that had, he basically said it's the biggest challenge that they have faced as a program is learning how to essentially sift as opposed to learning how to forage. And I would imagine that in some respects you are dealing with that as well. That group that you just described as they want to come to Vermont and they deserve the first shot, I'm sure is bigger than it was 4 or 5 years ago. And so it's not just about determining whether they can play at your level. It's also about determining whether or not they're going to be additive culturally to what it is that you bring. Do they want to come to Vermont for the reasons that the players who came before them that helped us find this success wanted to come to Vermont? How do you balance that?
That's a great question. You know, I think a lot of the young kids that are coming up in today's recruiting world are recognizing kind of the compartmentalization that you have to have to be a successful student athlete, with how to get recruited and what that daily life looks like when you get to the Division I level. So a lot of the kids, I think, are more educated than ever and know what to expect. You know, there has been a larger pool of kids that have been wanting to come to Vermont. I wouldn't say that it's jumped up to like the top of their list. It's just like they're adding that school onto their list of their auto send emails now, you know, of maybe a school they'll consider. So again, they still have to show me some other sign that they're invested other than just an email. So I try to take our process a little bit slower than a lot of schools, and that, you know, coming to prospect day, it means a lot to me, because I want to see if you're willing to physically make the trip to Burlington. Not only does it show me that you're willing to come up here and you're invested, but also I know that when you come here, you're going to see how beautiful and special this place is. So it kind of goes hand in hand. So just the initial contact, it really doesn't do a lot for me. You're going to have to show me some other sign that you're really serious about Vermont before I take you serious. So there's obviously the initial evaluation period, but the next level and the next tier of judging their character, how they act on their visit, those types of things, that's really step two. So we do cast a wider net, or like Andy Shea said, there is a little bit of sifting going on where before it was foraging. But now I think that we also have a little bit of a easier time saying, you know what, we don't need you, you know, because we have another guy that we didn't used to be able to get, but now we have him. So we don't have to take a chance on a kid that is a bad student, or take a chance on a kid that maybe have had a slip up off the field. So we can be more picky. But I do agree that the sifting process can definitely be harder than the forging.
What role does your team play in recruiting, specifically when it's hosting kids that are visiting campus? Do you rely on their feedback when it comes to making a decision on whether or not you think a kid would be a good culture fit?
I really do. But the thing that has changed a lot for me personally is, you know, we don't do very many official visits anymore. So a lot of times our recruits aren't staying the night with our players in the dorms, simply because I don't want to put that on our players. I don't want our student athletes to have to add that layer of responsibility to their daily lives. And I just think everybody has a little bit of a easier time if they stay with their parents in a hotel or they come up for the day, and we kind of eliminate that. But again, if they come to prospect day, they get to play under our coaches, under our current players, and we vet them through that process. But if there is a kid that comes for an official visit, like you said, if he goes to class with a guy or spends some time with him, we really do rely on him to say, hey, is this guy a good fit? Is he the same guy with you that he was with me? And I trust their, you know, feedback wholeheartedly. I trust everything that they say with regard to the kids that will work out here and kids that won't. But they just don't have as much of a time period to really evaluate it as they used to when kids would come for a weekend or kids would come for a football game. You know, those are things that we just don't have here at Vermont.
As we said at the top, we're recording this before September 1st, and it'll post on September 2nd. What is unique about this class of 2025 in terms of the way that you're going to try to approach communicating with them? How much do you guys emphasize day one point of contact versus, you know, just kind of taking it easy?
You know, as I said to you in our email, our approach is pretty vanilla. There's not going to be any, you know, ChatGPT going on with our recruiting process or anything, you know, cutting edge. It's pretty basic. It's pretty straightforward. We'll reach out on September 1 and express our interest in a small group of guys and let them, you know we're interested and why we're interested, and try to set up a phone call and just kind of start the dialogue that way. We've obviously done our research, and, you know, we've whittled our list down, and we have a good pecking order of who's going to get our texts and calls and things of that nature. But, you know, the real recruiting doesn't start until we get on the phone with those guys and we get to see what they're like and what their story is and why they may be interested in Vermont or why they might be a good fit for our program. With this particular class, I mean, I think it's, you know, there's a lot of talent in the midfield side and the defensive side of the ball. But, you know, I don't think there's anything else super unique or super urgent with recruiting needs for us and with this class. So it'll be pretty run of the mill. But I think I feel much better about this recruiting class in a sense that I have a staff to help me build this list this year, rather than kind of getting into the process later in the fall, which I had to do last year. We love our 24 class, but I'm really excited with our 25 class with just a little bit more lead time.
So in terms of how you tier your list and the communication corresponds, you know, we've talked to some of your peers about basically how the distinction between the type of message where it's like, you're our number one at this position versus you're going to have an opportunity. If we don't get number one, we're going to come after you, versus like, you're third or fourth. We want you to know that we're interested in you, but at the same time, we're not in a position to move on that opportunity right now. Just in terms of, I would imagine that there's some code when it comes to this type of communication. I guess my question is, do you guys move sequentially? Are you sending communication to all four of those tiers, or however you guys frame it? Or is it, no, we've got 20 guys that, you know, if we can get all 20 of these guys, we're going to take all 20 of these guys, and then we're going to be done. How does it work, and what are some of the codes? And if you don't tell me, I'm going to ask, so be ready.
As I said, I think for us, we don't really give more love to, you know, number one or number four, but we do show love based on the responses, right? Like if we're getting a quick response and there's a lot of interest there, that's a great thing. If he's not responding to us for a day or, you know, giving us a generic answer or form text or saying, hey, you know, I have a lot of calls, but, you know, can I talk to you in a week? You know, then we know that we need to move down the list. So we really just try to get feedback from them, and that kind of dictates how hard we go at each of these kids. You know, from that point, it becomes, when they come on their visit, like evaluating, is it really the same player that I saw on the field at Maverick that I have on this visit? You know, there's been a number of times that we've had a kid here and he hasn't been the right fit, and he was an extremely talented player, but we just were like, man, this is not going to work out. Like, let's really put our eggs into that basket. We really try to put the 80% of our time into the 20% that give us the most traction, rather than really casting that super wide net. Because for us, I like to wait a lot longer than September 1 to decide who's going to fill out our class, because some of those later picks are the best picks that we ever get. So we're not really going as hard as a lot of schools maybe in the top 15 do on September 1, just kind of starting the conversation now that we can, and really trying to take each process a little bit individually, because kids from state to state and different team to team, you know, they're a little bit different.
Yeah, it's such an interesting challenge from the standpoint of, you don't want to come on too strong in the sense that you want to give the impression that it's like, if a kid wants to commit on September 2nd, you're going to take that commitment. But at the same time, you also don't want to just not send a message of interest in order, or for fear of him assuming that you're not interested, when in fact you are. You just wanted to be patient with it. One of the really interesting elements of this whole process, and it kind of dovetails with the conversation we had about Thomas McCombie, but it's basically kind of going to where the puck's going to go, you know, skating to where the puck's going to go as opposed to where it is. And the idea of recruiting the player that's going to either arrive on campus in 18 months or, well, 24, 22 months, whatever the case may be, or the player who's going to contribute to you 4 years from now after being on your roster for 2 years and developing and growing through the combination of your weight room program, the skill development, the tactical understanding and lacrosse IQ that comes from practicing with you guys every day, and then the maturity that comes from being a member of your team. Lars Tiffany said that he feels like he's good at evaluating how good players are right now, but he thinks that it's his staff that do a better job of projecting how good players are going to be in the future. Where do you feel like you fall in that spectrum?
Great question. You know, I really rely on my assistant coaches. I mean, everyone's a conversation, and I just try to have coaches that I think are great evaluators that are going to put the time in to see these kids play multiple times so that we have more data than just one event. Obviously, showcase events are different than team events. High school events are different than club events. So there's a lot of data to kind of sift through. The developmental piece is huge. I mean, we're still a program that's young enough in its growth that I think there are kids that can, you know, commit here, that can come in and play right away. But at the same time, you know, a lot of the best programs, as you said, you know, these kids are having to wait a year or two to get into that starting role or to get into a meaningful playing time spot because there's so many good players ahead of them. So we're kind of at that in-between phase where we do have those guys that have played, you know, since freshman year, but we also have guys that we really want to develop their offhand. We want to get them in a weight room. Maybe their IQ needs a little be a little bit higher than it is, those types of things, or we got to shift their position to a different role. You know, I don't know if I really excel at either one of those. I just think, just trying to find kids that have, you know, the IQ, athletic IQ, the toughness and the athleticism as that kind of initial trio. And then we'll just kind of, you know, grow from there.
This is the last one. You mentioned that you like coaches who like to coach. Do you love recruiting? Do you like recruiting? Or do you recruit in service of being able to coach?
I love the relationships that come along with recruiting. I love the communication between parents and families and getting to be a part of a kid's journey. I love that. I feel like it's such an impactful time in their lives. And I certainly remember all of my official visits in high school and the coaches and the way the impressions that they made upon me. So I really relish that opportunity and hope that I put that same impression upon every kid that I recruit. At this point in my career, I wouldn't say I love going out to events all summer and watching kids play for the fourth, fifth time. But I definitely recruit because it is the lifeblood of your program. It's something that you have to do and be willing to put a lot of time into if you want to do something significant in the win column. So it's a little bit of both. I wouldn't say as I said, loving the travel piece, but I really do love the relationships and I love the results that come out of those.
Chris Fifes, It's been great. We really appreciate your time on the Inside Lacrosse podcast. Best of luck as you continue to finish out your 24s. Are you done with your 24s or you still have spots?
We still have spots. We're still talking to a couple 24s. You never know.
There you go. And then best of luck as you continue to develop those relationships with the 25s. We know that it's your favorite part because you just said it was. So look forward to getting eyes on the Catamounts in the fall and certainly in the spring of 24 when we get back on the field and the games count for real.
Awesome, Terry. Thank you very much for having me, and looking forward to the spring.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.